2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Raindrops are falling on my head, and just like the guy whose feet are too big for his bed, nothing seems to fit.
Good morning and welcome to the KSL Greenhouse Show. And yes, raindrops falling in downtown Salt Lake City this morning on this wonderful Saturday morning. Don't you love Saturdays, Ton?
I do.
I mean, even though we come to work, it's not really work talking about fun gardening things. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, this show, I think, is, you know, there's Tim's show, the outdoor show, mm-hmm. and then this one that I think that are probably the two shows that have little to do with the news and politics. And I love the station, but I also love doing the show. And it's just so different than a lot of the other programs.
Yeah, this is definitely the funnest thing I do all week long. You were talking earlier about the Facebook page for palm trees. And I was curious to know, you know how much I love succulents and I've become totally obsessed with them. If there is a local group that is looking at succulents.
I don't know of one, but with that being said, there may be.
Because growing succulents here in our state is going to be a lot different than growing them in California or
it
Texas
is.
Or We're, back east somewhere.
In those areas where you stay above about 10 or 15 degrees, there's just this whole world of succulent plants that you just can't grow here. And so, you know, you have to either grow them in your home or have a cold frame that you can keep them in that doesn't get too cold so that you can grow them. Mm-hmm. Now, I should mention really quick that strangely named Facebook page mm-hmm. is on our KSL Greenhouse Facebook as a post. And so if people want to go find it, they can go there instead of trying to search for it.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
So, but the succulents, and I don't know if you got into this last week with Sheridan, but Sheridan's been working with propagating succulents. And
you know, we actually had so many callers and texters, I didn't get to my own personal questions, which of course would focus around succulents right now because it's winter.
So we may need to get her back on.
That would be fun. I'll have to do that.
To talk about what she's doing. But it's not that they're super hard in a lot of cases. It's just that it's slightly different, well, a lot different than regular houseplants.
It's much different than regular houseplants. And one thing that I have learned in trying to do this in the last couple of months is they're all different. And so that's kind of why I was asking you if there was a Facebook group, because all of these plants, and some of them I don't even know their names, right? So I've been doing a little bit of research to try and find out what they are so that I can take care of them. You know, I can better take care of them. And like, for example, there's a variegated dwarf jade that looks just like an elephant plant. And so trying to determine which one it is that I have has been kind of a trick this week.
They do get really challenging on, you know, how they look, because there's, you know, like, for example, sedum, and there's tropical sedums and then there's hardy sedums. But then there's other plants that you could easily, there's one called donkey tail or burrow's tail that you could easily confuse that just are not. And so hopefully, you know, when you purchase them, they have tags in them. But if they don't,
but when you're like me and you love to pick up those bargains at the end of the season, or you like I've picked up some plants that came like there were multiple plants in a pot and I separated them and they weren't individually marked. So there are a few of them that I really don't know what they are.
Yeah. And so I think we probably need to locate some decent books on growing succulents and then hopefully
that's another problem altogether. I have now purchased a couple of different books, but they're not very specific, you know, and the truth of the matter is, you know, you have to wait till the plant dries out. Depends on how big the container is that you are planting, you know, you're propagating your succulents in. I mean, there are just so many different variables.
There are. And it's, you know, even within the succulent group, some of them are require more light, some of them less. And there's actually some nuances. And there's just not, you know, when you say this is how you grow a succulent, there's some general things you can do, mm-hmm. but there's specific ones that you also need to pay attention to. But here's a question. Have you delved into any cactus yet?
Cactus are just not my favorite thing, partly because I have a dog and he seems to find things like cactus out in the neighborhood that to get into. So cactus, I think they're very beautiful, but I kind of like to just look at those from afar.
Yeah, and even growing them in the house, every once in a while you'll see one that the spines have been cut off or something. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's some fun ones out there, but they're meant to be, once they're in a container, meant to be left alone.
Right. Oh, let's get to our texters here. The first one wants to know more about squash bug. How can you help them out with squash bug?
Well, squash bugs are anybody that grows winter squash, summer squash, pumpkins are the kind of like the bane of our gardening existence, mm-hmm. because you can grow a garden for a couple of years and then be just kind of naive and like, ah, I'm doing so wonderful. And by that third or fourth year, all of a sudden things just start going down. And so those squash bugs, once they are in your garden, they're there and they're very difficult to get rid of. And the only thing you can really do is go when the numbers build so high, if you especially haven't done any control, is skip a couple of years so that you can diminish the population. But, you know, while you're gardening and if you have your squash plants in, it's critical, especially if you just have 5 or 10 plants, to go out once a week in early summer and look at the undersides of the leaves for egg sacs and squish them so that they don't spread and multiply. So you're monitoring that way. And then there are some sprays out there that you can try that may help diminish their numbers. But for the home gardener that doesn't have a lot of squash, the most effective thing is that monitoring. And then if they're a little bigger, you can also get a gallon of soapy water. So you just get a gallon of water and put a couple tablespoons of dish soap in it and mix it down in the best you can and then pour that around the base of the plant. And the squash bugs will kind of think the party's over down there and they crawl up the stems and you can hand pick them off the vines of the squash and then drop them in a bucket with a couple of inches of soapy water in the bottom.
I am super happy to say I have no experience with squash bugs. And boy, hope I don't encounter them in my vegetable garden. Next person wants to know, Ton, when should they begin taking water sprouts out of apple trees?
You could start now. It's still, you know, usually mid-February is when we start pruning on our apples. But if you're super busy and you need to start, you can start pruning a little bit on apples and pears. But what you want to watch for in the weather is that the nighttime temperatures need to stay above 10 degrees. That's kind of the threshold for a lot of trees where they may take some damage on pruning. So if you're hiring somebody to prune, then you're going to have to be flexible because even though mid-February is when you want to start, you know, if somebody has 50 pruning jobs, you're going to have to just get in line and have your trees pruned. So, but the weather is going to be critical, and the orchards down on the south end of Utah County and up in Box Elder County start pruning in December, and just they will prune the least sensitive trees to that pruning and then move into the ones that are more sensitive to being pruned, you mm-hmm. know, at the wrong time of year. But they prune all winter long, and so it's not like a cardinal sin. But the reason we say to wait on apples and pears to mid-February and then on the other fruit trees to mid-March, the stone fruits, is because that's the period when the winter weather is usually mild enough that the pruning won't damage the tree.
Right. Last week, JD gave us a list of cool conifers that he loves. Our next texter wants to know if there are any conifers that are drought hardy.
Drought hardy, the juniper group would be the most drought hardy. And before you like turn off, you know, the show or something, because I'm talking about junipers, there's actually many really neat junipers out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got used to the Pfitzers and the Tams in the 60s and 70s that
everyone had.
Yes, they were on the front of the house hedge, and you had, you know, they were just everywhere. And people got to the point, landscape-wise, that when they would see junipers, especially those Pfitzers and Tams in the nursery, that they would want to vomit just because they were so ubiquitous. And so through the 90s and 2000s, junipers really plunged in popularity. But they're kind of, especially the other species that have different looks to them, there's a slow resurgence in popularity.
They have their place if you just plant the whole yard with them.
Correct.
Right? And that's what they did in the past.
Yeah, there's like a Japanese garden juniper that has the cultivar Blue Star, gets 2 to 3 feet high and wide and a perfect ball. And it can be trimmed a little bit if you need to, but there's some gorgeous junipers out there. There's another one called Tolson's Weeping that has, it's, I won't call it gorgeous, but it's a statement plant. So
many of us like to make a statement. Okay.
Yes, it's a statement plant. And some people really like the look of it. There's a Hollywood juniper that, left to its own devices, has a really kind of wild and woolly kind of growth habit, but it's the Hollywood juniper is the one that a lot of times if you see them trimmed into the butter balls, the balls on the end of the stems, that's Hollywood juniper. So I would say that even the columnar junipers, if you're looking for a hedgerow to, say, add a privacy screen or slow the wind down, and those trees longer term aren't going to have a lot of access to water, that junipers are the best option.
All right. Before we take a break, our next texter needs a little bit of help with timing. They have some huge metal planters with mature plants and shrubs. But in order for them to move them around their yard, they're going to have to temporarily take out those plants and shrubs because they're so heavy. So they're wondering about what you would think as far as timing and the process of keeping the roots intact when they have mature plants like that.
Mid-February would probably be the best time because the temperatures are cold enough that the plants are dormant, but the danger of really cold sub-zero temperatures are greatly diminished.
So now is not a good time. Wait a few more weeks.
You know, the weather is supposed to be, you know, and I haven't checked it in the last 24 hours, mm-hmm. but we're not supposed to be down around that 10-degree threshold, and they would probably be okay. It's just that waiting a couple of weeks may be a little better.
Okay. And how are they going to make sure that they keep the roots intact?
That's a problem.
Right.
And so I don't know. You know, on those heavy
times in planters, the roots mix with the different things that you have in the planter.
Yeah. I mean, I know that commercially, you know, places like Disneyland or even maybe Lagoon that really pride themselves on the unique plants and the care they take and just how decorated the places are, will put, they're oftentimes subtle, but they will have ways to transport those, whether they can get some forks from like a forklift underneath, or, you know, be able to get the forks on either side to lift. But I don't know that a lot of homeowners are going to have access to tractors and things to move those around, but that's how it would be dealt with more commercially.
That's how you'd want to do it so you didn't have to damage your plants.
Yes.
All right, the number to call, ask your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Welcome back to the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria Anton with you this morning. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Ton, DJ is in St. George and wants to know if it's a good idea for him or her to plant flowers or a garden.
Depends.
I'm not sure if they're talking about, hey, are we going to have water this year, or if is it too early to plant, but maybe you could address both of those.
It's a bit vague as far as what they're wondering. There are many things that they could plant right now and grow outside. You know, you can do a winter garden down there. It's warm enough with very little protection, so things like lettuce and cabbages, anything we'd grow in early spring here, you can generally do through the winter down in St. George.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as flowers, you know, there's many flowers that you can plant down there, at least not, I want to say many, but a lot more than here. And so the pansies, the English primrose, sometimes you can find some the digitalis foxglove that mm-hmm. has been forced during the winter. So there's a lot of options down there during the winter that are just not options up here. But if you're wanting to get your tomatoes and corn in, it's too early.
Okay, but there are some things that you can do. Next person wants to know when the right time is to prune grapevines, and can they treat the grapes for iron chlorosis, and what would be the best treatment?
Well, as far as pruning, if you read the books, they'll say about now, but locally we're finding because of winter damage that it's better to wait until late February into mid-March when we're a little more sure on how the winter's gone and mm-hmm. how much damage those grapes took, because the grapes took a lot of damage. You're going to not prune as heavily, but if we had a decent winter where those vines are intact, then you could prune a little more. Now, this is one that we would need to talk to Mike Heron more, USU's grape specialist, but the grapes, if you have them on a chain link fence and don't prune them for 10 or 15 years and all of a sudden you go back and go out and cut them back to nothing, mm-hmm. you're not going to have grapes for 3 or 4 years. And so if you are going to maintain grapes more of as a true crop and not a multi-purpose screen that you happen to get some fruit off of, you need to prune them annually and know what you're doing a little bit so that you can have good grape production, because if you skip years and then cut them back, that grape will take a few years to regenerate the kind of growth it needs to actually produce fruit.
Do they commonly get iron chlorosis?
Yes, depending on the variety and the rootstock. So to treat the iron chlorosis, the best time to do that is in mid-February to early April. And you would want to use a chelated iron, something along the lines of Miller's Ferra Plus or Grow More chelated iron. Both of those will work well.
How would you know if that's something that you needed to do?
The leaves are yellow and okay. through the summer. So the other thing I would recommend doing with this is that when you water those grapes, instead of putting the powder into the ground, you're going to mix it into a 5-gallon bucket and drizzle it along the row. So, and then water it in after the fact so you can drive the iron into the soil.
Okay. Next texter says they would like to grow a Utah pomegranate. Would it do well in Spanish Fork? And do you know where they would find one?
I don't know what a Utah pomegranate is.
I'm wondering if they're thinking back to the conversation we were having about the experiments that you were doing at USU and the experimental pomegranate that I planted.
There's a variety called AC Windy that was developed by the Combies up in Ogden, who were nursery owners back in the day. And that one's available. You can't order it directly from Dave Wilson Nursery, but that AC Windy is one variety. There are a couple of Russian varieties. There's Russian 21 and another one called Solovatsky that people have had some success with.
Mm-hmm.
What I would recommend they do is join another Facebook group called Utah Rare Fruit Growers, and they can get advice from folks that grow pomegranates. Brandon, what's his last name? A person up in Clinton has had a lot of success with them. And so that's what I would recommend doing. And so if you want to find pomegranates, I don't know of any place locally that carries them. And I can't say that there isn't one, but I don't know of one.
I'm keeping my fingers crossed that I just get blooms this year and actual pomegranates.
Yes.
Because my bush is big enough now that I would think it would do
it
well.
Is.
Yeah. Okay, Christina wants to know, she believes that she may have put too much dirt from her chicken coop in her vegetable garden last year. She wants to know how she can fix the soil for this year. She said zucchini did great, but they usually do. No tomatoes at all, though.
Could have been a little too much nitrogen. The only thing that she's really going to be able to do to fix it is know what the problem, if there is one, is first.
Okay.
So I would collect some soil samples out of the garden area where that chicken manure was applied. And you can go to the website usual, just the word usual.usu.edu, and download their paperwork, and it'll have pricing on there, and she wants what's called the routine test. So what will happen with this is that she'll get her results back, and the primary thing she's looking for is salinity levels, and it'll tell her if the salinity is too high or normal or whatever. But it'll also give phosphorus and potassium levels in the soil and the texture, and then any recommendations on nutrient, if you need to add something, it will give those too. Mm-hmm. But the routine test from the USU Soil Lab, it's like $25-$28. It's a good investment because it'll help you know if you need to add more nutrients or not, and if it's too salty.
Right. And how long does it usually take to get those tests back?
Right now, they're not doing a lot of them. So if you mail a sample in, they have to dry it down, usually within a week. BYU also has a soil lab that if you Google BYU Analytical Laboratory will come up. Their pricing is similar. If you live in Utah County and drop off your samples directly, you can get those results back faster.
Okay. Depending on how big her garden is, wouldn't she just be able to add some maybe garden soil or something to help?
No, I wouldn't recommend that, because anytime you add soil to your existing soil, mm-hmm. it can create problems. And so she did the right thing trying to improve the soil with organic matter. But when it's not composted and treated well, then it's oftentimes too salty.
Okay, that would have been my first instinct. Well, I'll just put some more garden soil in there.
Yeah, and that's not what you want to do. The only time I really recommend bringing in soil is when you need to raise grade, or if your existing soil is so bad that you have to.
All right. The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. We'll have much more coming up on the KSL Greenhouse following the news at the top of the hour. We'll be talking about peaches a little bit, a video that Ton did on a peach orchard. Stay with us.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.